up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drantz. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. It is a Canucks game day. Montreal in town, one of the original six teams. Always a big day on the calendar. Good atmosphere in the building.
Original six, overrated.
Whatever, they are.
Congratulations on winning a bunch of barely contested cups.
No, see,
those should count as Grey Cups.
Montreal won so many of them.
Best of six.
And they've won since also. Like, yes. They have the 70s Habs.
Oh,
and then
sure.
Two since then.
And the 70s Habs were the greatest team of all time.
The truly sad ones.
No aspersions being cast at the 70s Habs, yeah. The 86 Habs, the 93 Habs. Even the 2021 Habs made it to the Stanley Cup Final.
The truly sad ones are, well, the Leafs, because they haven't won since it went beyond six teams. Right. And so when Leafs fans try to crow about, like, being, are they still second in number of Stanley Cups won? I think.
Yes.
But it's like, yeah, but they were all won in a six-team league. What are you talking about? And it's also almost 60 years ago now as well. So you almost certainly weren't alive for it. But also the teams that had, like, crazy droughts in the six-team league, you know, like the Rangers.
Yep.
And I think the Blackhawks did as well, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Blackhawks were definitely the worst of those teams.
I think that's like
The Maple Leafs have 13, the Detroit Red Wings have 11.
Okay.
So, well, it was hard to win when the Habs were winning all of them.
I guess. But I just don't get how the Rangers and the Blackhawks were so futile in a sit. Like, you'd think you'd luck into one.
Yeah.
Eventually.
The story of the Guy Lafleur draft pick, by the way, do you know this one? Well, the Sam Pollock was the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens, and he acquired the pick used to select. So as a result of a dreadful, the Canadiens had the top pick from, so it was from the Seals, but the LA Kings early in the era of NHL expansion were also toward the bottom, and Montreal had, because Montreal always had, just this like preposterously loaded roster, right? Their backup goalie was like the fourth best goalie in the world. And to make sure that the Kings passed the Golden Knights in the standings and ensure that they had the right. The Golden Seals needed to finish behind the Kings. To make sure the Kings passed the Golden Seals, they traded them their backup goalie, who was really, really good, to make sure that they got the first overall pick. Kings, I think, end up with Marcel Dion out of that. So
there you go.
I mean, you couldn't go wrong. You were still getting a French-Canadian superstar, but obviously yes. Guy Lafleur was a different animal.
Yeah, Marcel Dion,
great player.
Consolation prize. Anyways, there's your original six history lesson of the day. It is a Canucks game day. We'll talk to Shayna Goldman.
Montreal Canadiens, game in the system.
That's right. Also from The Athletic at 12:30. We'll take your text. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet later. But first, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 11th. And as mentioned, the headline is the Canucks host Montreal tonight in the first game of an absolutely pivotal week. And we talked about how the week sets up, the two sets of back-to-backs a little bit on the show yesterday. But this really could be the make-or-break week for the Canucks as they try to make the playoffs, starting tonight with Montreal and then, of course, leading into tomorrow in Calgary against the Flames, against the team, one of the teams they're battling for a playoff spot. And they have a chance to make things a lot easier on themselves. Not that their work will be done, obviously, by any stretch, but man, it becomes a lot easier to get a good result from this week, to end this week in a good position, if you take care of business tonight against Montreal.
Yeah, and look, I think one of the big stories here is obviously going to be lineup stuff. Back-to-back,
yeah,
2 days off, back-to-back. So that's four games, 6 days, with two back-to-back sets and the four-point swings occurring on the second leg in both sort of sets of games. That is brutally difficult for this Canucks team. And this is, you know, I like to say that disadvantages accrue to the chase pack. advantages accrue to the teams at the top of the standings. And that's true as you go through the year, right? The ability to rest guys, the ability to not rush a guy back, the ability for things to be calm and chill. You know, you don't have your captain in the medical room, like convincing everybody that he's good to go because you're not in the spot where you desperately need those 2 points. That's not a luxury the Canucks have in navigating a thorny week that's thorny in part because Demko's injury, right? It didn't sound from Tockett's commentary yesterday that Demko's going to be available. Certainly the first set of back-to-back games.
Here. No.
Probably not the second set from how he talked about it. 2, 3, 4 practices was Tockett's exact quote.
Yep.
2, 3, or 4 practices. You know, he's confident he'll get him back at some point, but... So there's a goalie question here, and then there's the Quinn Hughes question. Now, Tockett said that Quinn Hughes would have practiced yesterday if the team had practiced. So do we count that as one? He was on the ice today in a non-contact jersey. Do we count that as two?
I don't think we do. I think we count today as one.
Maybe. I wonder. If Hughes skated on his own, and I'm sure he did, on Monday and went through his paces...
Mm-hmm.
Given the stakes of tomorrow's game in Calgary, that's one that certainly has my antenna up as something to watch for. Does Quinn Hughes not play tonight? Confirmed already. But does he make it back to help this team in the game they really can't afford to lose against a rested Calgary Flames side? Man, that would be a huge lift for this team, even if I think, especially given that, you know, Hughes came back into the lineup and really made it 2.66 games before re-aggravating whatever multiple ailments appears to be dealing with in his core. So, to me, this is the big question. Do they go Lankanen back-to-back? Does Hughes make it back for Calgary? Can this team find a way to win a game tonight that help? Like, they need to win. They also need to conserve energy. And they need to have legs for tomorrow. Like, what you don't want is the 5-4 overtime game.
Yeah.
What you don't want
You don't want to be chasing the game,
oh,
right?
You definitely don't want to be chasing.
We talked about that against Calgary on Wednesday. You got to get up early in that game. But even tonight, like, man, you would love to be in a comfortable position going into the third of this one, not desperately trying to chase the game.
No, and if you're, I mean, but the thing is chasing the game tonight matters a little bit less because you'll have legs. The what really, though, would be a huge boost is if you're able to put it away.
Like, that's what
you're able to put
so
it
you
away.
Could save your legs as much as possible going into tomorrow's game.
Play that fourth line a bunch, right? Like Drew O'Connor second on the Canucks in ice time. That's what you're looking for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Going to be interesting. There's a lot to navigate. This is a real test for, you know, everybody's stamina, durability, will, ingenuity. Like this is a fascinating week. From a hockey tactics perspective, a sports science perspective, and obviously the playoff race
testing,
looming large above it.
A big test for the coaching staff as well is how they manage it, how they manage the minutes. And really, I mean, the Lankanen-Shelov's decision tomorrow, and Rick Tocchet even said yesterday that it will depend at least a little bit on how the game tonight goes, right? If they can keep the shot total down and all that, that makes his decision a lot easier. I'm tempted to say we're going to see Lankanen either way, unless something truly crazy happens tonight, but... It's still a massive decision and a massive week for the organization, really top to bottom, as you were saying, from the coaches on down to the players and everyone in the organization. Anything specific, because there's a lot I want to get into in the broadsheet and the lineup notes today as well. Is there anything specific you want to get into with the matchup with the Habs as a team?
The Habs are fast, and the last time we saw them play the Canucks... That gave the Canucks fits as the Canucks. I mean, do you remember that game? So you got the two goal outburst from Lekkerimäki, JT Miller.
Yep.
And you also had the Miller glorious goal. Like, really his last dominant Canucks performance, I'd say, was in Montreal in that game. And yet the Habs had so many more chances off the rush against that version of the Vancouver Canucks that they got themselves back in and ultimately won it in overtime. This Habs team is fascinating, okay? Tockett kept talking about their speed, so you know that he's seeing it on tape. You know that it's a concern for him. But it's not just the speed, and I encourage our audience to watch for this. They actually attack like a roller hockey team. And I don't say that as an insult. What I mean by that is set breakouts, like not quite Anaheim Ducks flying V style. Not Anaheim Ducks, literally Mighty Ducks.
Mighty Ducks, yes.
flying V style. Like, it's not to that level, but it's pretty close. You will watch them. They will actually remove the puck from the offensive zone. They're the only team in hockey you'll see do this. At 5-on-5, take it back so that they can attack with speed. Like, that's how much they prize rush attacking. Watch for it tonight. I'm telling you, it is a completely distinct viewing experience relative to the sport that everyone else is playing in the NHL. And to their credit, it works. They have enough juice between Caulfield and a variety of other guys that they've got with speed. Suzuki. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can go on and on. We all know the names. They have enough juice that it actually functions, that they can make it work. Slavkovsky, Anderson can do it with speed. You've got Gallagher, who is absolutely in the unk phase of his career, Vancouver Giants legend. Still has game. Like, still absolutely has game and is having a phenomenal season. So that's an interesting factor here, because we have seen this Canucks team struggle mm-hmm. against faster teams at times. That said, this is a new version of the Canucks. The team we saw play against the Habs in early January did not have Marcus Pettersson, did not have Elias Pettersson in the lineup, did not have Drew O'Connor, did not have Filip Hedl. Like, this is a very different looking team. They did have JT Miller, which is a huge factor.
And to be fair, I think about like the Utah game recently where they struggled with speed, and that's those guys in the lineup. You know what I mean? So
for sure. And Anaheim. I'd add the Anaheim game. That said, I think the truth is this is a faster Canucks team.
Yes.
And so I'm curious to see what this matchup looks like, given the fact that we saw them right before the renovation and now. Right? That mm-hmm. that to me is sort of one of the things that I'm going to be watching for tonight. But yeah, this Habs team prioritizes puck possession, prioritizes attacking off the rush. Canucks will have their handful trying to sort of attack against that. That said, Canucks did have some success off the rush, specifically Lekkerimäki when they played against them. So some of the Habs' aggressiveness can be turned into mistakes, opportunities for the Canucks to capitalize off of mistakes. And let's be real. I'm curious. I don't know. We haven't talked about this on air, so I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. I actually think the four games that we've seen the Canucks play since the unlucky loss in Seattle. So that's the loss against Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
That's the win over the Wild.
The win over the Ducks.
And the loss against the Stars.
Yeah.
I actually think that represents one of the best sustained stretches of hockey we've seen from the team this season. Now, granted, low bar.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the effort level and work rate, the competitive fire has been there consistently across all four of those games. I think the Canucks have actually controlled play 5-on-5 in a way that we haven't seen from them since October. I think there's a mentality and an identity that's beginning to be discernible again. Now, that said, the identity is counterpunching hockey. It is still low event. It relies on being frustrating defensively and having big goal-saving defensive plays at key moments, plus good goaltending. But the one thing I think they've done well is with the puck, especially attacking through the neutral zone, I think you're starting to see the shape of some of what this team wanted to look like this season that we almost never saw early in the year. Like, you're seeing that anchoring play. You know, this is the play where the Canucks winger streaks slashes across the blue line and stops and gets the outlet pass from the defender and then hits it, bumps it back
mm-hmm.
to a winger skating into the zone with speed. You're seeing the Canucks execute that like three or four times a period, and they're not getting goals out of it. I think partly because they've been brutally unlucky, and also Filip Hedl likes to be wasteful with those opportunities, but you're seeing them get into the zone with pace a lot and look a lot more threatening through the neutral zone. Puck's not bouncing their way in the offensive end of the rink. The top six hasn't been good enough. Pettersson's still not driving play close to the level you need him to, but I do think there's a progress. Like, I really do think that there's been progress made over the last 10 days in terms of this team actually carving out a sustainable identity and finding a floor. I still worry about the stylistic trappings of that, especially if they're going to face like Winnipeg.
But
Montreal ain't Winnipeg.
The problem is that it's an identity that is almost solely focused on the floor as opposed to the ceiling. Now, I get that in the moment.
Well, that's consistent with how this team does business.
You're trying to push, right? You're trying to push for the playoffs, and so you're kind of looking at it with the pieces we have available.
This is how we win.
This is how we win. I get that. It's just also, it's hard to get too excited about it at the end of the day.
Well, for sure. It's hard to get too excited about, especially if the results aren't there.
Yes,
right?
But, very much so.
But I think we shouldn't let this run of form where they're allowing like three deflection goals a game and getting brutally unlucky in both ends. Like their top six since coming back from the Four Nations break have scored 2 goals on 80 shots mm-hmm. with Pedersen and Hedel on the ice. It's like that dam's going to break eventually here. Even if neither guy plays better, like even if Pedersen doesn't get back to driving play and Hedel continues to be wasteful with opportunities attacking through the neutral zone with speed, you're still going to get more goals than that as the sample expands. So anyway, I'm seeing some progress in the Canucks game at a crucial moment for this team. And I didn't want to go into this stretch of games without noting it because mm-hmm. I actually think it's been pretty pronounced when I consider what I've seen from their last 4 outings and the contrast with what I saw on the road trip prior to those 4 games.
All right, let's go to the broadsheet. Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff, regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650. He was on Canucks Central with Sat and Dan yesterday and had a lot of interesting things to say about Brock Besser, what did or didn't happen around the deadline with Brock Besser, where things stand now, where things could be headed with Brock Besser as well. And first of all, saying that there was some significant damage done to the relationship between the Canucks and Brock Besser on Friday after the deadline passed. And of course, that's referring to Patrick Alvin's commentary at his post-deadline presser and the way he addressed the price the teams were or weren't willing to pay for Brock Besser. So interesting to hear that. You know, that's not just us reading into things or straining to find drama. Frank is reporting, no, that did some damage. That was noticed, and that hurt the relationship. He also says that his understanding as of right now, and he notes that could always change, is that Besser has decided he wants to go to market. He wants to go to July 1st and see what's out there and see which other teams are willing to bid on his services. Now, as Frank says, of course, that could always change. The Canucks could up their offer as you get farther away from the comments from Patrick Alvin. Maybe the damage becomes a little less or a little less severe. Anyways, so this could always change. But it does sound like the state of play is that not only did the Canucks hold on to Brock Besser at the trade deadline, and by the way, Frank agreeing with you and Friedman that there was no first round pick on the table for Brock Besser, so understandable there. But it does sound like very much like not only did they hold on to him past the deadline, they also decreased the likelihood of him signing here on a long-term extension. Again, that could change because you're in the aftermath. There's going to be emotions. People get heated, all of that. But as Frank says, his understanding right now is that Brock Besser wants to test the open market, and unless something significantly changes, that's where it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to belabor the point here. You usually get these deals done before the deadline,
mm-hmm.
or you don't get them done. Especially with players as speculated about as Besser. So by no means should we be closing the door, but this is what Frank is reporting is very much in line with what our expectations need to be, the shape of this, just based on what history of these situations tells us and the dynamics of play, how emotional the trade deadline can be. And, you know, honestly, like think about it in your own life and work. When you get to the precipice of walking away, you know what I mean? By the time you've made that decision professionally and any job you do, any opportunity you consider, in your head, when you get to the precipice of walking away, you're ready to. Doesn't mean you will, but it certainly is a mental process that I think anyone goes through while unwinding from a place where they've generally been satisfied and content.
And it was interesting also because Frank kind of describes this process for Besser where the more it starts to become real that he could play for another team other than the Canucks, the more he starts to kind of look clearly at all of the drama that has surrounded the team in his tenure, but especially recently, and kind of see that for what it is rather than looking at it as, well, hey, I've been here my whole life. Like, that's fine. Other teams deal with drama too. Maybe there's a different perspective on it now from Besser as it starts to become more of a possibility that he goes elsewhere, but he doesn't figure out an extension with the Vancouver Canucks. So that's the update from the broadsheet today. Lineup notes. So as you mentioned, team had a morning skate. Quinn Hughes skated in a non-contact jersey. He will not play today. Tockett said TBD beyond today. So left it open for tomorrow. We'll see what his status is against the Flames, but he will not be in the lineup tonight for the Canucks. And of course, also at the morning skate, new line combinations at forward. Again, this is a running theme now. We're seeing a lot of shuffling, a lot of juggling as Rick Tocchet desperately tries to find something, some look, some configuration that will juice the offense a little bit.
So, you know, we have these little watchwords for what coaches do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The what's the reckoning day is
yes.
one of our favorites.
Consequences day.
You know what this one is?
What?
This is the Mortal Kombat button mash. You're getting beat by someone who you think is better than you.
Yeah.
And you know if you can just find the one special, you're going to turn the tide. And Tocchet is MK button mashing.
Yeah.
To try and find the Kamur.
There's only so many combinations, right? And we're running through a lot of them at this point. So I'll read them out. So Elias Pettersson skating between Drew O'Connor and Brock Besser. Blueger with Joshua and Garland. Hedl with Jake DeBrusque and Jonathan Lekkermäki. And then Pius Suter between Nils Höglander and Kiefer Sherwood. So that is the latest attempt to find some jump, some juice, whatever you want to say, some jam, whatever word you want to describe what they've been missing so dearly offensively. This is what Rick Tocchet is rolling out to try to figure it out. And, you know, it has to start with Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser. And I say that knowing full well that we're likely not going to get anything approaching that level from Elias Pettersson this year. This text comes in: Pettersson and Besser need to play like first liners, put the team on their backs. Enough is enough. Everyone else falls into place then. It's not quite that simple, but it's not far off either. If you're getting legitimate first-line minutes and first-line production from Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser, so many other things fall into place. So many other things look so much better. They haven't played together a ton in the last few years, certainly since Besser and JT Miller really discovered that chemistry and became solidified as a duo at the top of the Canucks lineup. But man, this would be a great time for them to rediscover some chemistry and find a way to get each other going. The Canucks desperately need more from those two guys at the top of the lineup. Kevin Lankinen starts in net. No surprise there. The big question is whether he'll start tomorrow as well.
Spoiler alert. He will.
Yeah, he probably will. Have you seen who the Habs goalie is going to be? I have not seen it before the show started. Okay. But no Patrick Laine tonight in the lineup for Montreal. Playoff standings update. Canucks playoff odds sit at 53%. Utah came back from 3-0 against the Leafs last night, but they do end up losing in a shutout. So they now sit with 67 points in 64 games. Two back of the Canucks. The Canucks will play their game in hand tonight, so a chance to go back up to 4 points over Utah with the same number of games played if they get the win tonight.
Did you watch, by the way, the Utah Hockey Club last night?
I did not.
Oh, what a great game. They absolutely speedbagged the Leafs and got so unlucky to lose another one-goal game.
This is what I'm saying, though.
No, I know.
Like, good process doesn't always produce really hot results over the final 18 games of a season.
Oh, I know, but that fastball is incredible. Anaheim, Seattle, Vancouver, their next three games. So we could be having a very different conversation this time next week.
Yeah.
That was wildly impressive, clawing back from 3-0 down, and they had the Leafs absolutely on the ropes the entirety of the third period, and then, of course, Keller hit a post in overtime, and if you didn't see Austin Matthews' shootout finish last night, go check that out. That was sick. Canucks are favored at home, -150. Favored, yay!
What?
-150, Habs +125 on the money line. The over-under is set at 5.5. And guess what? There is so much steam on the under in a Vancouver Canucks game that you can get even money, plus money, on the over 5.5. Let's just quickly do the playoff odds update as well. To make the playoffs as of today, the Vancouver Canucks are even money again, +100. Utah's OTL, not in any way swaying the
market. Doesn't shape anything. No, because they get a point, right? So it doesn't really move things that much
in
either direction.
The Utah Hockey Club went down to +550, which pretty tasty.
Interesting. All right, that is the whiteboard for today. We will take a break. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.